Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, June 7th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, happy 100.
I was going to say, don't beat around the bush, Graham. This is our 100th episode. We should be excited.
I know. You know, it's funny. So technically, this is the 166th episode of the Clear Admit podcast, but it's the 100th in our wiretap series, which you and I have had just a ton of fun producing. And so we're celebrating that today. And I pulled out a bunch of facts and figures, but how are you doing overall before we dive into that stuff?
I'm just excited to get on with this stuff.
All right. So what we're going to do with this episode is we have some fun facts and figures. We are going to still profile our usual, slate of candidates. And then we also have some voices from those of you who tune in. That we got a handful of audio clips. We picked out a few, and they're going to be interspersed throughout the show, which will be fun. But Alex, you know, I started looking. I was just kind of curious, like, okay, we've done 100 of these things. It's been about 2 years, and I found a bunch of interesting stuff. Like, for example, somehow we've never missed a week, which is impressive. And I guess that means you and I need to take more vacation. But we've never missed a week since we started Wiretaps, so far as I know.
No, and I think that's really important.
Yeah.
It's consistency.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. So, yeah, absolutely. Even over the holiday seasons, various holidays around the world, we've still done Wiretaps. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And then the other thing I noticed is that the first episode of Wiretaps was episode number 40 of the podcast overall, right? So it's going back a couple years. And I actually listened to it this morning, and it wasn't very good. I mean, it was like our first one. It was we tried profiling a lot of candidates. I think we did four during the show, and it was a long episode. And I think we were still kind of learning the ropes, but it was fun because we talked about why we were doing it. And I think what's so cool is that it's still those principles that kind of led us onto this trail are still very much there. This idea that you can learn as an MBA applicant by hearing what other candidates should be doing, right? So you can really learn by example. And by now, as you pointed out last week, we've profiled like 300 candidates, right? And they're all different. You know, we've got military folks, we've got, people in all corners of the earth, people in all industries, people with high GPAs, low GPAs, you know, terrible GMAT scores, fantastic GMAT scores. I mean, we've tried to cover everything, even people who've been convicted just really interesting cases that we've tackled. So I think it's working. I mean, I don't know about you.
Yeah. Hopefully some people that are now at top business schools.
Yes. I believe there are actually quite a few. In fact, one of the audio clips came from someone who I think is just starting now at Wharton Lauder. So yeah, there's some, we've got a couple of people at Stanford that I know of who were guests on the show. And that actually brings me to the other thing. I wanted to see which Wiretaps episodes were most popular, right? So I went through the data and I found that I picked out the top five episodes. So here they are in order. The number one episode is episode 72 of the podcast overall. And that episode featured an older applicant, a candidate with a low GPA and a high GMAT, and then a candidate who was a decision wire candidate, was trying to decide between a couple of schools. And then from there it goes, you know, we have episode 49, which was the number two, which featured someone who's in brand marketing, another low GPA candidate, and a military candidate who was enlisted, which I think that was probably of interest to folks. The next one was episode 42, which gave advice on the timing of one's applications. We talked a ton about post-MBA goals as well. And there was another military candidate. So we clearly have a lot of folks listening to these military episodes. Number four, most popular, was episode 97, where we had our special guests, Brad and Marsha. You might remember they were the couple that got into a few different top schools. I believe that Marsha had gotten into Stanford, Harvard, and Wharton. So she ran the trilogy. And I think Brad got into Stanford and Wharton. And so they were trying to decide where to go. And we actually had them on the show because we first profiled their decision and then asked them to come on and tell us what they decided.
Yeah, they followed our advice because we're so super smart.
So they're at Stanford now. So that's the fourth most popular ever Wiretaps episode. And then the fifth one was a whole episode where we talked a lot about career changes. We had a candidate who had like long-term goals in Africa. And we also talked a lot about, there was a candidate who had a lot of questions about retaking the GMAT exam. So those were the top five. The only other thing I looked at was I was kind of thinking about, well, where do people come from who tune in? And so we had the US is the number one market, but we had a ton of listeners in India, Canada, the UK, Australia, Japan, Brazil, and Singapore. Those were the top countries. I then looked at like the back end of the list and saw that we even have people listening in Mongolia, Kuwait, Ethiopia, Serbia, Sri Lanka, and Morocco. So we're kind of all over the map. And then you might not like this, but I started to think about what are some of the things that we do a lot or that we say a lot. And actually some of the folks who sent in clips, when they emailed me, they kind of, reminded me of some of this stuff. So, for example, one of the, person that emailed me wrote, let's kick on, you know, so he remembered that you often say, let's kick on as we move through the podcast. Another one wrote in their, they sent their audio clip and they wrote, stay safe. And I thought that was obviously cueing on something that you say at the end of each episode. And then obviously the other thing that we get a lot of are pub updates, because you tend to go to the pub either usually after we record, hopefully not before, right?
Nice. It's actually interesting that you talk about that, because I host a lot of webinars for some other work that I do. Mm-hmm. And I watched the recordings before I host again, so I sort of know what I talked about last time and stuff.
Yep.
And it's terrible because I always say, hopefully that makes sense. And I must repeat that phrase 3 or 4 times per webinar. And every time now I say it, then I think, oh, I've got to stop saying that. That's like a ridiculous thing to keep saying.
Right.
But anyway, it is fun. I mean, obviously, Let's Kick On is a reference to my history with the horse racing industry. But yeah, no, all super fun stuff. I have to say, Graham, it's great to hear these stats and everything, but I'm really proud of this podcast. I mean, obviously, it was your sort of ingenuity or whatever to put us down that pathway of doing podcast period. So that's absolutely fantastic. And the Wiretaps concept, I think, is really, really, really terrific. And I'm glad to see that we're still doing it 100 episodes later.
Yeah, and actually, credit where credit's due. I mean, Wiretaps was your idea, and I think it's a brilliant idea, and it's been so much fun doing this every week with you. Yeah, it's a pleasure. You pick out great candidates. You always have good things to say. I love the back and forth, so we will keep doing it. I did want to mention that our 100th episode of Wiretaps is sponsored by Carnegie Mellon's Tepper School of Business, so we're going to hear from them, and then, as you would say, we can kick on. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of 3 formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's TEPPER.
Very good. Let's kick on.
All right. So what we're going to do is, I did want to mention, we still have a series of events coming up in July where we're going to sit down with a bunch of top business schools. They're July 14th, 21st, and 28th, Wednesdays at noon Eastern. And we have basically a who's who of every top school coming to those events. So check out the website and sign up for those. Other than that, we're going to kind of get rid of all the usual housekeeping stuff this week because we have a lot to cover and we want to hear those audio clips from some of our fans. But Alex, let's, if you're ready, why don't we get into the first candidate?
I'm not going to say it.
I thought you were going to say
it. You say, thank you, Alex. Thank you, Graham. Congrats on 100. That was your youngest listener and future M7 applicant. She's my 2-year-old daughter who is often in the car or kitchen or on the changing table when I had your podcast on. You guys are so fun to listen to, and I've learned so much about the MBA process from Wiretaps. It really helped keep me motivated during the long hours of GMAT prep each night, and you gave me the motivation to pursue a dream school and even consider a few schools I hadn't been thinking about. I knew nothing about the process before finding your podcast, and I still don't know everything, but I'm set up for success. Thank you for the laughs and the insights from your fan in Portland, Oregon. Now it's time to kick on with applications.
All right, so this is Wiretaps candidate number 1. So this is an apply wire entry. The candidate wants to start school in the fall of 22. She has six schools on her target list, and those schools are Columbia, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, NYU, and Darden. She's been working in strategy and operations at a unicorn tech company. And post-MBA, she wants to get into consulting and then maybe back into a kind of tech role or, you know, work with a company, so not just consulting. And then, obviously, for the short term, the companies on her target list are Bain BCG and McKinsey. That's a common refrain that we see. GMAT score is a 700, although she does plan to take it again. She's taken it three times, so she's going to take it a fourth. GPA 3.5. 4 years of experience, and this is, as I said, a female candidate who's in New York City and wants to stay in New York in the long term. She mentioned that she studied at a top 30 liberal arts college, and from there went and worked at a healthcare analytics company working with major pharma, and then I guess she pivoted from there, I guess, for the last year and a half or so. She's been at a unicorn healthcare tech company, again, in strategy and operations. Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because I think, you know, one of the things she's worried about and pointed out to us is this GMAT issue. But what do you make of her overall?
I am speculating, but I think her work experience is outstanding. And I really do believe that that's probably the absolute strength of this candidacy. So it's kind of like, you know, the candidate that does that a couple of years analyst role in a consulting firm, but then steps out into another situation for a couple of years in strategy and operations at a company like this person has done.
Right.
That sort of not necessarily pivot, but that sort of transition and moving on after the couple of years, I think is typically happens with the elite of the candidates that are coming out of the consulting firms, or at least that's my sort of perception. And in this case, I think that's probably quite similar. So I love the work experience. Hopefully that's backed up by super strong recs. It also looks like she does good things outside of work, which is very good. So at the end of the day, Graham, you know, a 700 GMAT is still a good score. I know, you know, it's below the average of some of the top schools, but candidates are getting admitted to all the very, very top schools with scores lower than 700. If they have super strong experience and if all the other stuff is really, really strong, which I think in the case of this candidate is probably the case. So I would say, if she can nudge that score up 10 or 20 points, that might be helpful. Just make sure, and we talked about this before we came on air, that there's evidence in her academic work for quant skills. But it looks like there must be, because she does quant-related work, certainly in her analytics role, analytics company, that's got to have to have been quant related, big data and all that stuff. And then I think now she's tutoring folks in stats and stuff. So I got to believe that she's got some quant training. I frankly, I'm not sure she's aiming high enough, Graham. And I know you want to counsel her to stick with the sort of healthcare pathway. And that's why Wharton's a good fit for her. I think, frankly, Wharton's a good fit for her, whatever she wants to do, whether it's more leaning toward healthcare or more leaning towards tech, potentially in the healthcare domain. But yeah, why not even take a punt at Harvard or Stanford? I do really like this candidacy.
Yeah, so I know she wants to land in New York after business school. And so, you know, obviously she's got, you know, Stern and Columbia on the list, but then she has a number of other schools. And yeah, what jumped out at me was it sounded like she wanted ultimately to maybe be back in tech, ideally with a big, big tech company, but in a healthcare role. I mean, she mentioned that in her note. And so I was thinking, okay, yeah, maybe you want to work on healthcare related stuff at Apple. You know, that could be great. Mm. But then I thought, well, why not apply to Wharton and do their healthcare management program? That might be a good inroad there. But then she mentioned, well, she's not so sure about the healthcare bit. She really wants to go to tech. but not necessarily to a healthcare company. But as I said, you know, like Apple or others are getting increasingly involved in that healthcare domain.
I mean, honestly, Graham, not to interrupt, but I read a story about Amazon yesterday in the UK. They're doing a whole bunch of work with COVID testing.
Right.
But the idea is they're going to roll on once we've dealt with the COVID situation. They'll use the same technologies for other stuff. So clearly all these top tech companies are pushing on that healthcare angle.
Yeah, and with wearables, and I mean, there's so many ways So I feel like I was kind of wanting to encourage her to like play up the healthcare angle. No one's gonna, you can still go to McKinsey or wherever in the short term, but I was just thinking this is like an interesting lens through which we could view your candidacy, and it'll help her to stand out. And so that was all I was thinking. The other thing I was worried about, like you said, is it's one thing if her job is somewhat quantitative and even if some of her outside activities are, but if she has an undergraduate transcript which doesn't have a lot of quant on it or maybe not great marks in quant-related stuff, and then the GMAT score is lower, and if that's a quant issue, then we start to get into that danger zone where I would say, oh, take, you know, HBS Core Online or do something, you know, get your score up, whatever you need to do to demonstrate that capacity. Because for one reason or another, when the schools are judging someone's quantitative ability, they're really going to rely, for the most part, on, you know, your marks in school and your test score.
Right.
So in any event, it could be that maybe she's struggling on the verbal side of the test. We don't know because she didn't say. And I only mention that because it's just common to see quant scores that are lower. It just seems like that's the area that often people are trying to boost. But in any event, I would just encourage her to keep that all in mind. But I, like you, really like this candidate. I think some of the outside activities are fantastic. She's doing some coding workshops and helping people learn coding. And I don't know, there's just a lot to like. And I agree, you know, why isn't Harvard or Wharton on the list? I mean, can't hurt. And those schools, you know, they give out a lot of scholarship to haulers. There's a lot of reasons to have them on the list. And they're in the Northeast Corridor. Stanford would be another story. It's a little further afield if she wants to be in New York. But obviously, you can go anywhere you want from a place like Stanford. So in any event, I hear you, and I wonder if maybe aiming high in round one, you know, hit a handful of schools, see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, then you can filter in some of those other schools in the second round. Because again, she's not coming from a majorly overrepresented part of the pool.
Right. No, absolutely agree with that. And I guess throw a quick question back to you, Graham. She's got Columbia on the list. Obviously, Columbia fits well if she wants to be in New York. Does she have to apply Columbia early decision?
It's funny because in the very first episode of Wiretaps, you talked about this and you made a very bold statement, which was you said, if you don't apply early decision to Columbia, you're telling them that they're not your first choice.
I think that's correct, right?
Which, yeah. I mean, I think that's what one could make that, you know, draw that conclusion. I mean, it's a tough call because I recognize that she, you know, I mean, she wants to be in New York and getting in there early, maybe that would be great. She can just wrap everything up before Christmas and have her stuff all lined up. But, I would say, yeah, if she's excited about Columbia, applying there early makes a lot of sense. Obviously, if it's not at the top of her list, then she has to think through the mechanics of, well, what happens if I get in and I'll have only a few weeks to make a deposit? Like, she has to really think through those steps. But I mean, I don't know. It sounds like if you're a New Yorker, want to stay in New York, Columbia is a fantastic option, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's already a top school, but it also happens to be in New York, and they're moving to a new campus. And so there's a lot to like there. I would encourage her to think about that for sure.
When are they actually going to that new campus? Because they were moving to a new campus about 50 years ago.
So it actually is happening now. So I believe that in this next academic year, everything will shift to the new campus. I don't think it's going to be September, but I believe it is January. That's my understanding.
Wow.
So yeah, so things are moving forward. And it did take a while, but everything takes a while in New York, I guess, when it comes to real estate and getting something off the ground. So there you go. All right, so shall we move on to our next candidate?
Fantastic. Let's kick on.
Hello, everyone. I was featured on Wiretaps in September 2020 and found the experience extremely rewarding. Alex and Graham's advice helped me understand my weaknesses and strength, and I really enjoyed the overall review and, of course, listening to many other Wiretaps episodes. I'll be attending the Wharton School of UPenn, pursuing an MBA and an MA in International Studies.
All right, so this is Wiretaps candidate number 2. this candidate is from an ApplyWire entry. They're wanting to start school in the fall of 22, just like our first candidate. 7 schools on the target list. Those schools are Berkeley, Duke, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Wharton, and UT Austin McCombs. They have been working in corporate strategy for an ed tech company. And post-MBA, this person mentions, and it's a guy, he says, I want to work in venture capital or entrepreneurship. And he's got a whole bunch of companies listed, including Owl Ventures, Learn Capital, New Market Ventures, and Emerge Education. So a lot of niche, you know, kind of companies that focused on ed tech. GRE score is a 330, GPA a 3.6. This person's been working for 4 years and doesn't really know where he wants to land post-business school in terms of geography. And he indicates that he wants to stay in his current industry, but he'd love to work in ed tech, venture capital, or maybe at a startup, or even start his own company. He says he firmly believes that education can still be a true vehicle of social mobility, and he wants to help reduce inequities within the confines of our current educational structure. So he added a long addendum as well with some further details, but I wanted to kind of just first jump in and highlight the fact that he asked us a few very specific questions at the end of his post. And it turns out he is applying to business school with his girlfriend, and that both of them work at the same company. They're on the same team, and they're both applying for fall 22. And they would love to go to the same program too, as you might imagine, with couples, right? So he's curious to know, like, what does that mean? Like, does their joint application have any influence on their likelihood of getting in? And he also wondered if he's got the right schools on his target list and whether ed tech is like a big differentiator or not. So I'll let you tackle these and I can weigh in too. But what do you make of this?
He's a diehard New York Mets fan. What does that mean, Graham?
That means he's used to disappointment and futility. Sorry, I had to. I was going to like skip that part because, as you guys, some of our listeners know, I'm from Philadelphia, so I'm a Philadelphia Phillies fan. But one of our employees at Clearman is a major Mets fan. So there's an ongoing battle.
Ah.
Yeah, Mike on our team is a Mets fan. So we know Mets fans. But anyway, the Mets are in first place right now. So I really probably should shut up.
Very good. Very good. I think. Again, another great candidate this candidate, I think. And the ed tech space is something we're a bit more familiar with, and my other work sort of also deals in the ed tech space. I'm going to answer the question about the sort of applying with your spouse or your partner, because I think that's a really interesting question. And how do schools deal with these scenarios where you know, at the end of the day, you're going to be better off if you go to the same school as your partner. So the ADCOM's going to know that the partners are more than likely, most likely, want to be at the same spot. And as I said to this candidate, you know, as long as your partner's not a dud, and frankly, they responded that the partner's probably better than them, so that clearly they're not a dud, then I think it can help. Because what we have to deal with is this idea: at top schools, there are more admissible candidates than candidates that can be admitted. That's the luxury that top schools are dealing with in the admissions process. So as long as both partners are admissible, so they both fit in to that category, if one of the partners is a superstar, that might elevate the other partner. That's sort of my thesis. Now, if one of the partners is a dud, certainly that's not going to be helpful. But I don't think it eliminates the prospects of the other partner. We're not going to deny someone because we don't think they're coming because we're denying the other partner. But nevertheless, I do think it works to your favor on the other side of the coin. I.e., we're going to admit you. You're good. You're good enough. But we're going to admit you because we think your partner's a superstar. So I think that can happen. I'm not saying in different cases it has happened, but I know in my experience at Wharton, that feels like the strategy that we would have adopted. in that regard. I do think this candidate has some interesting work experience. I mean, working in the ed tech space, so that's definitely a growing space. Healthcare space is definitely a growing space with the COVID pandemic. Ed tech space is a growing space because of the COVID pandemic,
right?
And so forth. So in that regard, they're in the right space. And it looks like they've done well and had impact. Impact's super important. On the volunteer side, maybe that could be beefed up a little bit. Again, being a New York Mets fan, I don't know that that necessarily is essay-worthy material. But,
right.
But obviously passion and interest in the running and the biking and so on and so forth. But I think there's potentially a lot to like here. Super numbers too, right? So they're 3.6 GPA with a 3.30 GRE. This is a super smart person. So that's going to be helpful. We did have a little bit of a query about the goals, just to making sure that they're plausible. So this idea with your goals, that they need to be realistic. They need to be ambitious. You need to show that you're someone that's going to make an impact in the long run. That's very good. But they also need to be credible and plausible. And not that they're not necessarily plausible, but targeting venture capital always could sort of make an adcom a little bit queasy. Is that truly realistic? And would it make better sense to say, actually, I want to stay in the ed tech space. I want to do X, Y, and Z in it, maybe in a startup capacity or working with an emerging firm or whatever, rather than front-ending it with a VC-esque goal. I know that's the sort of feedback you had, so sorry to jump on your thing, but I'll turn it back over to you, Graham.
Yeah, no, I think what I was saying before we got on air was that I feel like, you know, VC is always a tough sell in any domain. Like it's just not an easy industry to kind of break into. So I was thinking, well, if I were this candidate, I would focus on wanting to be an ed tech, whether that takes the form of working in an ed tech consultancy or at a startup or an established ed tech player or in VC. Like this person could have an open mind. I think they can't sort of cast too wide of a net, right? You got to be careful. But I just was thinking that maybe they've gotten too specific in the short term, because I don't know if they've done the math on this, but my guess is some of the firms on their list don't hire anybody from the schools on their list, or maybe one person a year or something. So you got to be careful about getting into kind of long odds. So, but I think EdTech, to answer his question, EdTech will differentiate. Like you said, like healthcare is kind of an up and coming field. There aren't a ton of candidates from that domain. Obviously we see more now than we did, 10 years ago or something, but it's still, I think, a nice differentiator. I absolutely agree with you. If both candidates are qualified, then applying as a couple, especially if one of the candidates is kind of a superstar, can really help. One thing I wanted to mention is not every school allows you to connect the dots or has like a box to tick on the form when you're applying. So I would certainly encourage, make it known that you're applying with your spouse. Maybe that's a quick optional note of a sentence or two that you include as an optional quote essay, where you just say, just want you to know we're applying together. And I just think it's important to make sure that those dots get connected. I don't think you make any kind of ultimatum in the note. I think if anything, you'd have to think about how you'd want to phrase this, how do you want to phrase this. But I think it's good for the school to know. And maybe it's more the kind of thing that you could say in an interview or when you, I don't know, maybe you have some thoughts on this, Alex, because I'm now kind of wondering, what is the best way to convey it? Because I think it would be a shame, and I've seen it happen, where candidates apply as a couple, but the school never knows that because, two different readers read the file. There isn't any obvious connection. There's not a shared last name because they're just partners or something. I would not want this to go, to sort of be off the radar. Like, I'd want the school to know. But how would you do it?
I mean, like you say, I would just use the optional essay, and it only needs to be a sentence or two. And just saying my partner and their name is also applying to this program. That's basically all you need to do.
And maybe just a line like to the effect of, and we would love to join the Wharton community together or something. Or, it could just be simple as that. Not an ultimatum, like, and we're not coming if you don't accept us both. But in any event, I think it's ultimately going to be a good thing in this instance. And yeah, you actually mentioned something interesting about the Mets thing. And this isn't, I'm not going to get into sports rivalries and everything, but I think if I were this candidate, I would focus more on the other stuff. I mean, it sounds like he's got a lot of other interests, because when someone says, I'm a diehard fill-in-the-blank team fan, it sort of conjures up an image which, and you know, granted, I'm like a diehard Phillies fan, so I, you know, I'm, I know what it means, right? But I think it's, you don't want to necessarily be seen as like, the first thing that jumps into my mind is like a face painter or, you know, someone who's like at the game going bonkers and stuff. And that may not be the most sort of academic of images to convey, right? So I don't know that I would bother to like include that. It's, you know, I don't know. What do you think about that? Like, would you put it on your, like, would you put it in the application? To me, it's not necessarily a relevant thing.
Yeah, I feel like I still got a hangover from Chelsea beating Man City in the Champions League final. So I would be considered a diehard City fan.
Yes.
But yeah, I think you make a good point. That's right. That's very much irrelevant. And I assume that the candidate knows that.
Right.
No, I think actually a really good candidate. We could talk long and hard about some of the things that they can improve on. But on the surface, this is a great candidacy. And if their spouse is potentially the better half, I imagine they'll get some really interesting offers.
Great. All right. Well, yeah, thanks to that person for posting and best of luck to both he and his him and his partner. So let's move along here.
Hi, Graham. Hi, Alex. Congratulations to 100 episodes of the podcast. That's a fantastic milestone to hit. I'm relatively new to both the website and the podcast, but I've really enjoyed listening to it, and I was excited to see that my post on ApplyWire was actually featured there just recently. So thank you so much for all your input there, and keep it going. Congratulations again.
Now we've got Wiretaps candidate number 3. So this is another ApplyWire entry, and again, looking to start school in the fall of 22. This person has a whopping 13 schools on the list, Cambridge, Carnegie Mellon, Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Duke, LBS, Michigan, Oxford, Washington Foster, UCLA, UVA, and Yale. So a lot of schools. They've been working in Big Four tech advisory, and they want to get into consulting or tech after business school. They've got the usual suspects in Bain, BCG, and McKinsey, but also a handful of tech companies since they're not sure. So they've got Google, LinkedIn, Tesla, Microsoft, which I guess Microsoft owns LinkedIn. So they've got a GMAT score of 730. Their GPA is a 7.2 out of 10, which is this candidate is located in India. So the Indian system is, you know, out of 10 or out of 100, basically, you could think of it. One other thing to note for India is that you rarely see people, I mean, it's super rare to see anybody over an 80 or an 8.0 out of 10. So 7.2 is not bad. It depends where they went, though. We're going to learn more about that. They've got 3 years of work experience, and again, located in India and want to land in the USA after business school. So, Alex, what do you make of this? I mean, this person's an engineer, Indian male. They tick a lot of the overrepresented boxes. What do you want to kind of say about this candidate?
Yeah, my sense for this candidate is they've actually done very well at work, relative to where they are. They're engaged in their communities and doing good things, and they have other sort of interests and so on and so forth. To me, this is a stereotypical male. I'm assuming now, maybe it's female.
No, they said male. Yeah, they said male.
Okay, male IT India tech candidate who's probably just a little bit better than a lot of what we see. But we tend to see just really strong candidates that fit into this bucket. The sad reality is this is an overrepresented bucket. With 3 years of experience, they're a little bit earlier in their trajectory than some of the candidates that we would review. But nevertheless, it does look like they've done well. So the question is, where do they belong? Sort of what sort of target school should they be aiming at and so forth? And how does it all tie to their post-MBA goals? Making sure that their goals are well developed, that's going to be important because that's a sort of a symptom of someone applying a little bit earlier, the goals might not be as well developed. So make sure that side of the candidacy looks super strong. I think they've thrown out a couple of examples, product management at a big tech firm, consulting at MNB. Let's sort that out. Make sure you really know the next step. And then what is the long-term vision and passion and where do you see yourself in sort of 10 years' time? what sort of trajectory. Now, like you say, they have a lot of target schools on their list. And again, that's symptomatic of someone earlier in the application cycle and maybe a little bit earlier in their career development. So they haven't really thought through this step. So we've got some schools in Europe. We've got schools in the United States. I think they've got to be applying to schools in the United States if they want to be in the US post-MBA. So I would filter out the European choices for now. And then with the US schools, they've got sort of top 20 schools, they've got M7, and they've got sort of top 16. So they've mixed it up, which is probably a good thing to do at this stage. But the question is, Graham, do they fit in that top 16 bucket, top 20 bucket, or can they aim a bit higher, or should they be selecting a couple from each of these buckets? Again, I think they're probably super smart. They've probably done well at work, they're engaged outside of work, and they're doing well. But are they ready? Do they have the substance to really be a top performer in an M7 type environment now? Or maybe in another year, would they be a stronger candidate? And therefore, does it make sense to apply this upcoming year or further develop their candidacy so they can go to an M7? So to me, in the back of my mind, is making sure that they pick the absolute right time to apply for the MBA. Because the MBA really helps elevate a candidate like this to another level of life experiences.
Yeah, it's a tricky, you know, I agree. I mean, this candidate's overrepresented, like you said. I did, you know, some of the things that have happened to them at work, like they've been promoted twice with a third promotion that's forthcoming. They mentioned they led the pilot for a $1 billion transformation effort project. They, you know, they do a lot of stuff with diversity and inclusion. So they, I don't know, I feel like this person does have a lot of extras going for them. But the downside is that, yeah, like you say, like they may just sort of, it might be hard to sort of jump off the page, right? Because the test score is great. I mean, it's the 730 is right around the average at these top schools. But I would argue that if we were to pull out all the candidates who make the cut who are from India, that number, the average is probably higher. So yeah, this is a tough call. They do say they want to take the GMAT again and try to get up to a 750. I do think that, you know, that wouldn't hurt, obviously, if they had a higher score. I could not agree more. They need to figure out their goals and just take one path or the other. And I also think similarly, like you said, like they've got all these schools on their list, which is fine. But if they know they want to be in the U.S., they probably just focus on the U.S. schools because they got to knock this list down by about half, I would think. So, yeah. And then I think the answer to your question about whether they do, you know, a couple of M7, a couple of top 15 and a couple of top 20 or whatever, I think that comes back to this test score issue. And I also would want to know, where did they go to undergraduate? You know, they're a computer science engineer, but did they go to one of the IITs? In which case the 7.2, that might be great. You know, they could be all set. If they went to a next tier school in India, then they have a little bit more work to do potentially because they're going to, you know, just less a kind of program that the program they've attended will have less a reputation, at least in the admissions world for business school. So I think that's where the higher test score could help though, right? So it's all kind of intertwined, but I like to think that they have some things on their resume that jump out in terms of like, that, you know, they mentioned they've trained 2,000 plus students across India in public speaking and computer literacy. It sounds like this person's not one of these like, you know, computer geek, you know, not a great communicator or some of the stereotypes that you would think of, right? So I think that could help too. But that stuff needs to come through in the recommendations, et cetera. So I don't know what, yeah, it's a tough call as to where this person will land. But I would think that they should be at minimum looking at, you know, kind of the top 16 US. I mean, that would be a place to start and maybe, you know, have a school or two on either side of that.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, a tough call though.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly the sweet spot, is that top 16 right now. And they've listed out programs like Cornell Johnson, Tuck, Fuqua and Ross, and Anderson and Darden, actually. They all fit into that top 16. And then they've got, and Yale, actually, and they've got a couple of schools either side that would fit too. So what I want to make it clear is I think this is a wickedly smart person who's done everything exceptionally well to date. They just appear to fall into this overrepresented bucket. And they're a little bit earlier in their career than some other sort of candidates for the very top schools. So that might work against them just a little bit. It's really important they apply in round one to the bulk of their targeted schools. They know that. They already said that's the first thing they said in their notes. So they're clearly gearing up for this. And I wish them the best of luck. But make sure they recognise the challenges. Get those goals really fleshed out more effectively. I think that would be a good starting point here.
Yeah, and read the book that they can get for free registering on our site. The book that you wrote about, kind of becoming a clear admit, basically how you navigate this process. Because I often feel like sometimes folks just don't execute on the application. Yeah. And so they would probably benefit from just really understanding the ins and outs of the strategy. But yeah, best of luck to them. Really appreciate the post.
Hi, y'all. This is Caroline. I started listening to Wiretaps last summer when I was starting my applications, and it was so useful. I really loved the case method approach to admissions and Alex and Graham's kind and inclusive style. When I was featured on Wiretaps, Graham and Alex gave me some really thoughtful, specific, and kind advice. I ended up taking some of it, like removing jargon from my application and ignoring other bits, like applying to Stanford. Sorry, guys. In all, it really paid off. I applied and got into MIT Sloan in round one. Without the podcast, I wouldn't have known to negotiate for fellowships, which I was able to successfully do. I'm really excited for the fall and have already met some of my new classmates. So thank you so much.
Alex, we've done it. This is our 100th episode. We've now profiled, 300 different candidates. So it's been a pleasure and a lot of fun this week to celebrate. And as you know, we're going to be back next week. We never miss a week, it seems. So we'll be back in 1 week's time to do it all again. But thanks, Alex, for all your efforts over the past 100 episodes.
Brilliant, Graham. Great job. Always great working with you and everyone else. Please stay safe. And there we go. Stay safe.
The Clear Admit podcast, better than a traffic jam.
I like that. I am feeling a little groggy, but I don't know if that's because I didn't sleep well last night or...
maybe too long at the pub yesterday.
I'm not trying to provide policy advice to different countries and anything silly like that.
Yeah, or if I see Macron in the streets here in Paris, I'll let him know. Alex, I hear the pubs are open in England. Is this a rumor or is it true?
The pubs are open, we're just not allowed to go inside them.
So how do you get the beer out?